Hey everyone, this is Jimmy Conrad, your favorite former U.S. men's national team player and the host of the Call It What You Want podcast. And I'm here to tell you that Vuori is a versatile clothing brand that speaks my language. It's inspired from the coastal California lifestyle, just like me. Its products stand the test of time, just like me. And also just like me, it endeavors to inspire others to live vibrant, healthy lives. Vuori gear is designed to look great in everyday life while also being perfect for any workout activity. I'm currently rocking the men's Sunday performance jogger, and don't let the name deceive you. You can wear these babies any day of the week and in any situation. I'm talking going to the office, running errands, the gym, whatever your heart desires, because Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/sports. That's Vuori.com/sports. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Again, go to Vuori.com/sports and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
It's weekend recap time, and my God, do we have a packed episode for you. Joan Laporta looking good for Barcelona president. Rangers win the Scottish Premiership. Manchester United beat Man City. A good week for Barcelona as the Madrid derby ends in a draw. Juventus beat Lazio. So much more, including Bayern Munich defeating Borussia Dortmund in their Clásico. We got Jimmy Conrad. We got Heath Pierce. Weekend recap begins right now. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Que Golazo Weekend Recap. And my goodness, what a recap we have in store for you. With me, of course, Jimmy Conrad. Jimmy C, what's up, man?
What is up? I'm excited to get into this. Let's get going.
Absolutely. HP, Heath Pierce, how are you, my brother?
I'm good. I'm glad how you prefaced how great this recap is going to be. I like that. Setting the bar high for everyone.
I looked into the crystal ball and I know already it's going to be amazing, but there's a lot to talk about, everybody. We're going to try and keep it lean and mean for you. A lot to discuss. Let's begin, boys, with Rangers. Rangers winning the Scottish Premiership for the first time in 10 years after Celtic failing to beat Dundee United. It's a world record tally, by the way, 55 titles, one more than Northern Ireland's Linfield. Unbeaten in the league with six games left, Rangers. And really, it's an amazing story. The club's last league title was in 2011, but everything fell apart due to financial turmoil. And we're in Scotland's bottom tier after going into administration. They returned to the top league 5 years ago, to the top flight. Steven Gerrard, of course, took over in 2018, and now they are champions. Jimmy Conrad, Rangers. DeMarcus Beasley is happy. We know that much. How do you feel about this?
Yeah, and so is Marisa Du and Carlos Bocanegra and Claudio Reyna. A lot of Americans going through Rangers. Yeah, I'm excited for Steven Gerrard in particular. I think there were a lot of question marks as to whether he was going to be a good manager. We've seen a lot of top players play and then try to get into coaching. Diego Armando Maradona being one of them. It just really never clicked as a manager, but Steven Gerrard seems to have figured it out. And what I'm really impressed about is just how good they are on both sides of the ball. It's not like they're just one-sided. They're just good at scoring goals, or they're just good at defending. He's got them playing pretty well on both sides, and that's pretty impressive. And I wonder now how long he's going to stay at Rangers, because he's going to be in demand a little bit, and he's going to want that experience in the Premier League. And now with Liverpool struggling, not to say they're going to get rid of Jurgen Klopp. Obviously, this was a pretty crazy year for them, but you have to wonder at some point, Jurgen Klopp's going to probably want to try to do something different, look for a new challenge. And Steven Gerrard probably needs a little Premier League. I'm just setting this up so he goes to Newcastle. Okay, I'm done because Newcastle sucks.
Well, no, you set this up beautifully anyway, because in our Google Doc of our show, that's my question. That is my question. How long before Gerrard comes in? And essentially, I would imagine, because Klopp, Heath Pierce, is not going to be manager of Liverpool forever, Steven Gerrard at some point has to take over that one, don't you think?
That's a very good question. I mean, Jurgen Klopp set the bar so high, and we haven't seen a ton of success. Managing Rangers is basically a 1-2 fight versus Celtic. Granted, Celtic have been, unstoppable for the last 9 years. I think they won 9 titles straight, right? And this stopped them from hitting that 10th in a row. And rebuilding something is really, really hard. And I want to give that respect, but but going into a Liverpool, by the way, that people said were going to dominate for 4, 5, 6, 7 years straight with the team that they had, the contract status they had, the depth that they had, and to now see them in the situation that they're in, a very difficult club to step into for sure for a manager. I think he's cut his teeth here. But I don't know. I would love Luis, what do you think? You think, or Jimmy, do you think he could step in? That's a huge jump. Right. It's failure at Rangers when you don't win the title every year, even when they're rebuilding. Right. For the fans, they expect that either you win or it's a bust of a season. But going to a Liverpool in the state that it is with the expectations that it is, I don't know. Do you think he could step in right away? I'm not sure that's the right move for the club or for him at this point in his managerial career.
Go ahead, Jimmy.
No, I was just going to say, let's use Frank Lampard, his national team teammate, as an example of someone that probably needed to have that stepping stone to get that Premier League experience without necessarily that pressure that you're talking about, Heath. That's why, again, I'm putting my flag in the ground saying, Steven Gerrard, please come to Newcastle. And we don't have it. Just keep us up. If we play pretty, that's great. But you know, we just need to stay up and try to have some success a little bit along the way. And that would be a nice stepping stone. I'm just using them as an example, but I think Frank Lampard could have used a little bit of that too before he jumped into the hot seat that is known as Chelsea, especially given that Roman Abramovich has a trigger finger for his manager. So I don't think Steven Gerrard would say no if they approached him, of course, you know, but I think it would behoove him to maybe find that little step before he takes over the Liverpool job.
Let's not take anything away from Rangers FC, which is really the beginning of this conversation. That was my fault because we segued into that question. But Rangers, congratulations for the Scottish Premiership title. Hey, guess what? Their first game as champions, the Old Firm against Celtic. So shouldn't that one be fun? All right, let's move on now. Let's really recap the weekend even more. So let's begin, of course, in the Premier League, the Manchester Derby. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer wins his third straight derby against Pep Guardiola. Absolutely amazing. 2-0. A perfect plan, I think, from United's perspective, as Man City finally loses. Unbelievable. Jimmy Conrad, none of us saw this happening. We didn't. We really didn't. I mean, we knew that it'd be tight, but
you say the perfect game plan, but did they really script this Gabriel Jesus playing defense all of a sudden out of nowhere and fouling at Martial in the box or not playing defense? It's tough. I look at that game and I look at it from a defensive perspective, and City had players to make plays on both goals that United scored, and they got to feel pretty hard done by that. They didn't get more out of it. They still need to hit the back of the net at the end of the day. They didn't get a goal. So fair play to Manchester United for 4 consecutive clean sheets in the Premier League. And I have the stat. I think you guys will like this one. Among the 67 managers that Pep Guardiola has faced more than 3 times across all competitions as a top flight manager, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is the only one to have beaten him more often than he has lost.
He's his bogeyman.
It's crazy, right? Because we sit here like we still don't. I honestly want to hear from you guys. I still, and maybe the people listening as well, hit us up on Twitter. I still don't know if Ole Gunnar's a good manager, and I just don't know. I'm not convinced, but then sometimes I am. He signed Bruno Fernandes, so that's something.
Yep. No, Heath, I'll throw it to you.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, who says Bruno Fernandes can't score against the big six, you know, Gabriel Jesus, you know, making that argument for him. But again, it's weird because we give City all this credit for their ability to solve problems, right? But today was another day. It was just a different curveball that they had to face, and they couldn't do that. And that's where I want to give credit to Manchester United. City, against everybody else, going down 1-0, probably would have still been able to find a way out, right? A long game, play the game. But they, for long patches, though, they had a lot of possession. There wasn't that usual possession that we saw. This was more earlier when they were getting a lot of draws, not losing a lot, but it just seemed a little bit lacking that rhythm or that ability to break down United. And so there's been a lot of talk, Jimmy, and I agree, of is Ole Gunnar a good manager? Are they a good team? Are Manchester United in a dip of form, right? And I think I was listening on the broadcast, and they said his response to that was like, well, only Man City is ahead of us. So, like, what kind of form do you want us to be in? When Man City are on, like, record-breaking form, we're just behind them. You know, I think they drew 3 straight or something like that. But yeah, I think there has to be some sort of respect given, because if you look on paper, United versus City is a far better team. But they are getting a lot out of this United team. And so I do think Ole Gunnar, at least with this club and this time, has found a way to continue to get results. I think we're holding him to the standard of like, yeah, you were in first place at one point. You probably could have been in a title race, but you're not. And that's going to get held against him. But ultimately, second place at this point in the season, maybe you had your bets on that if you're a United fan. Do you think if somebody said second place at this point in the year, looking at the last couple of seasons, would you take it?
Right. I want to just say two quick things. Both of you made two points that I wanted to highlight. One of them was Jimmy's point about we don't know the kind of manager Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is. I agree. I mean, I tweeted, I said, listen, the thing is that there have been obviously examples of him really just completely failing at trying to really take over a game or and even lose one. But I feel there have been three examples this season where you've seen him like tactically outmanage his counterpart. The Real Sociedad game, the RB Leipzig game, and this one. I thought this one was really, yeah, I agree. I think City are going to lament at the fact that they didn't take enough of their chances. But to Heath's point, which is the second thing I wanted to bring up, is like City has done that in the past. They just couldn't do it. And let's, don't take anything away from the strategy where United, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer put this four front man line, Anthony Martial, Daniel James, Rashford at the beginning, and then Fernandes, just completely pressing. If there was one way that United were going to win this, but just being selective in their press. And they were so good at that. And that's what happened in the second goal with the counter. Dean Henderson to Luke Shaw. He starts to play and finish it. So I think it was a very good victory. Does it mean that they're going to do anything? No, the title's done. Man City has this anyway. I just think that it was a very good performance from United. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer saw what City's hand was. And he thought, well, I'm going to try and counter you with a counter. And I think that's exactly what happened. Jimmy, additional thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I got one. And I think that, and I want everybody to think about this at home, and you got to write me like 100, you know, write a little essay for me. No, I'm just kidding. So what I want you guys to answer is, and this is what I think, but I'm curious about your thoughts. City losing right now. There was so much hype around this winning streak, this unbeaten streak. They'd been going since mid-November. They hadn't lost and so on and so forth and 21 straight games. And I think now that that's done, you can almost relax a little bit. And things didn't go their way. And now I feel like as a manager, Pep can kind of maybe rejuvenate the guys. Like, hey, all right, we got this out of our system, especially before the Champions League stuff. You know, I wonder, because at some point, as that continued, that hype continued to grow, it just would have been, that's all the focus would have been on all the time. And I think it would have taken them away a little bit from them trying to win. Obviously they're still in the conversation to win four trophies, but I don't know. I wonder, sometimes getting a loss isn't the worst thing, especially for a team who can be beat at times, but maybe this is a wake-up call.
Yeah, and they have a very quick game to come up very fast against Southampton midweek as well. So they'll have just a few days now before they can rectify that. Heath, any final thoughts on this Manchester derby and what it means for United, to be perfectly honest? Because, you know, put some respect on OGS's name for this one.
Yeah, I think, you know, they're in second place, right? Here's my thought, though. They're still, I think, 10 games left in the Premier League season and a 9-point gap. I don't think City will drop that, but, you know, in terms of like needing basically United to win out or Leicester to win out to be in that competition, but it's not a huge gap. And to counter Jimmy's point, what happens when you actually just believe the luck that, like, you know, you create your own luck when you're on that momentum? What happens when that luck goes the wrong way? Again, they have enough quality that they have individual playmakers that can win on any given day, even when they play poorly. But, you know, I am curious about that. And that, you know, my final thought is that the race is still 9 points, but if you can drop a game like that in the next 10, one, two, three of those with the schedule that City has, maybe we find it a 5-point race in a month from now.
Yeah, that's cute. Now City's winning this. It's fine.
Guys, I was trying to create a little hype here,
we get it.
It's just a blip. It's what I think, but no, it's a fair argument. It's not impossible, but let's keep going with the Premier League because I wanted to finish because we have so many games, everybody, in other leagues in Europe. Quickly, Burnley tied Arsenal. I'm sure HP is happy about that one. Southampton won 2-0 against Sheffield United. Aston Villa and Wolves drew 0-0. Leicester City came back from 1-0 down to beat Brighton 2-1. West Brom and Newcastle 0-0. Again, Jimmy is probably half happy about it because of the injuries to Newcastle, to be perfectly honest. Let's not stay in Newcastle. We will talk about it later. But I wanted to really focus. Tottenham beats Crystal Palace 4-1. Watch Gareth Bale, by the way, once again scoring. And Harry Kane with a brace. His first goal, ridiculous. Please make sure that you watch it. There are two games on Monday. I wanted to just focus, Jimmy, on Fulham beating Liverpool. Liverpool's here, what I want to talk about. Sixth straight loss at home. Yes, the injuries are an issue, but my God, six straight loss at home. They are now eighth, right? Above Villa, who are ninth, but Villa have two games in hand. Liverpool, the defending champion right now, looking like probably Champions League next season, unless they win it. It's kind of difficult. What do you make of this?
Yeah, I don't even know what to say about Liverpool. I'm going to further your stats, though. Liverpool have lost each of their last six home games, as you mentioned, but this is the first season they've suffered six home league defeats just for a whole season since 1953, 1954. That's when they finished bottom that season and also the last campaign in which they were relegated. So I don't know. They're not going to get relegated, obviously, but that's not a fun stat to be linked to, I think, with regard to Liverpool. There's something going on mentally. I think they're tired. I think that they have been papering over the cracks. I've used that phrase before when discussing them in the past. And I think it continues to show. They're just not firing on that whole cylinder. And what on all cylinders, excuse me. And when Jurgen Klopp came out this past week and said in the media that if people don't want to be here because we're not in the Champions League or whatever, then they can leave. And I thought that was a really, if you look at the underlying message, it seems, I feel like, I don't know if he's doing it on purpose, but it seems like he's setting everybody up to like, we're not good enough to qualify for Europe. Whether he's trying to send that subliminal message to the ownership group, just to let them know, hey, listen, we just don't have the squad, sending it to his group. Hey, we're just not strong enough, whatever it is. Or if he's just trying to convince himself, whatever. I found that interesting for him to come out and say that at this point in the season when they're still fighting for things. So I don't know. That felt like a bit of a concession in some ways. And Fulham, to their credit, I don't want to take anything away from them. They came out and tried to punch Liverpool in the face. They sensed a vulnerable team. They're playing very well right now. And they might find themselves out of the relegation zone here pretty quick. But there's something going on with Liverpool. And even Jurgen Klopp came out and said, if I knew how to hit the switch overnight, I'd do it. And I think it's just going to take a miracle. So he's using these really big statements to talk about this season. And it's an interesting place and an interesting words that he's choosing to use.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And well done to Fulham. You said they're even on points with Brighton, just in the relegation zone, purely on goal difference. So, you know, things are looking up for them. By the way, before I ask Keith his thoughts on Liverpool, they still have to play United, they got to play, you know, Arsenal, Villa, you know, I say Villa because we beat them 7-2. So,
okay, here we go.
But, you know, obviously this is Liverpool, the defending champion, Heath. But to Jimmy's point, there's something going on. And I know that it's been a very difficult season. Injuries, external circumstances away from the pitch. But this is amazing to me. I mean, the goal that they conceded, Mohamed Salah didn't even look bothered. I mean, obviously he was bothered, but his body language was so defeated. There's something going on here. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they rode on luck and momentum for a lot of the year as they went through. I mean, quality, don't get me wrong. They're the champions, right? I don't want to take away from the quality of them, but a lot of things were getting figured out in real time, right? They were building this new plane as they flew it this year, as they went through injuries. And that works for a while. And you just sort of like, don't question this. Just keep going. Like it's working, you know, and they were able to hold on for a long time. And then they just kept on losing more and more players. And now I do think they have this very victim's mentality of like, nothing will go our way. Nothing's right. And as soon as that sinks into the mentality of the players, that's dangerous. That's really dangerous when the players just sort of be like, oh, it's a write-off of a season. And I didn't read the context or listen to the context of which Jurgen Klopp came out and said that. I did see the quote that he had about if they don't want to, you know, if they only want to be here to play, you know, whatever Champions League, then they can leave. Or if we're not playing Champions League, I didn't see the context around that. So I don't know where it all started or came from, or if he was probed into that question. But I do think there is a mentality that's missing, that they've had this demand of success around them and they've all been part of this project, and the project has worked. The project hasn't not worked. And now they're having to see when the project's not working, right? And this is, again, I equate this to when you have Mourinho ball, in a sense, where when it's working, nobody questions it, right? It's working. It's great. It's good. You don't question, even if it's rough or it's tough scheduling, the style of play is not attractive and whatever. And then when it's not working, you start to that little bit of doubt comes in of like, I don't want to play like this. I don't want to chase the ball. I don't want to gegenpress. I don't want to, you know, and you start to have egos come to life, right? And balancing those egos, the manager at the highest level is about managing egos. It's not managing the quality. Yeah, there's tactics and all these things, but that many stars, you're managing egos. And as soon as you have one, two, three of them, and I don't know who they are, whether it's because of injury or because of attitude, there is some sort of poison right now within this group that the belief isn't there. I don't necessarily think it's a Jurgen Klopp versus the players, but certainly he's starting to poke and prod to get this to come to life. And again, maybe some of those comments are taken out of context in the media right now, but I do think he is like kind of going deeper and deeper into his well of thoughts and ideas of what's going to get these guys back to life to get results.
Yeah. Yeah. Jimmy, final thoughts, because it is a really, like you said, it's a really interesting comment from Klopp to say that. I'm not, you know, I wonder if it's something that's been triggering around the training ground. I don't know. It's just, it's been very weird. And you know, the stats speaks for themselves. Liverpool right now in a position of no Champions League football next year, unless they win it, of course.
I don't think they're getting there. So if you're a Liverpool fan, we're just, if you want a hug, we can offer those to you at some point, a virtual hug or in real life when we ever see you guys and cross paths. You're not going to qualify for Europe this season. I don't even know if you're going to finish top six. Right. And that's going to be a bitter pill, for you guys to swallow. I will say you have a big game this midweek against RB Leipzig. You have a very precarious 2-0 lead, as we've seen countless times in all leagues. That's not a very good lead to have sometimes. They didn't start a full team. The normal team, right? Fabinho didn't start. Mane didn't start. Trent Alexander-Arnold didn't start. But Diego Jota got a start, which is nice. Shaqiri was on the other side, and then Mo Salah was the false nine. Keita came in, Milner. I mean, they just had, you know, different guys in the team, and obviously with an eye on looking, making sure they get past RB Leipzig. But that, I feel like we saw in the past, to Heath's point, that the system was so good and so strong, it didn't matter what the lineup was over the last few seasons prior to this one. They always got a result. They always had some swagger about them, some attitude, some confidence. And right now, if Fulham can come in and kind of punch you in the face and knock you around at Anfield, you're definitely – something's not right. And I think they can't wait for this season to end. That's really what Liverpool needs. Liverpool just needs this season to end so they can all relax and take a breath and then get re-energized for the next season.
Luis, the last thing I would say, by the way, is – there were long periods that Fulham had Liverpool pinned back, like legitimately attacking with numbers. It looked reversed. And it's just not something I'm used to seeing, right? I'm used to, like, they literally had them pinned back with numbers where they just couldn't seem to get out of their own half for periods. And normally that's not something that you see. And that was one of the things I took away from the match today.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, everybody, stick around because we have so much more to discuss and we're going to answer your questions at the end of the episode. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Der Klassiker really lived up to its billing. Stay right here. Que Golazo. We'll be right back.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Que Golazo Weekend Recap. Jimmy Conrad, Heath Pierce. We are now moving to Germany, their classicer Bundesliga action. My God, it did not disappoint. Bayern Munich wins this one. Just unbelievable game here. First, Erling Haaland gets those two goals. You think, well, wow, Borussia Dortmund looking good. And then here comes Bayern Munich, as we always say. They come back, Robert Lewandowski does his thing, and they end up winning their classicer to the score of 4-2. Lewandowski just, I don't know what to say, guys. Unbelievable. Jimmy Conrad, talk to me about this game.
Well, I'm going to start with me hitting my bet, if you guys remember from Thursday's preview. I said Lewandowski to score, both teams to score, Bayern Munich to win. I was sweating that one for a little bit till, you know, once Lewandowski scored his first, and I thought, all right, I think they're
going to come back. You were sweating
that bet? After it was down 2-0, I was a little worried. Not that Lewandowski wouldn't score, but that Bayern would go on to win. I still didn't know. I mean, Dortmund started so strong. I thought they would be able to hold on, but that obviously was not the case. And I just wondered, I actually tweeted it out. I wonder what Lewandowski is thinking right at this moment after Erling Haaland scored a second. Like, I want to know what he's thinking right now. And clearly he said, I'm just going to go smash this punk kid. I don't care who he is. And I'm going to score three because I'm Robert Lewandowski and you're not. And I can't say enough about Bayern Munich. It's interesting. Their last, let's say 20 minutes of the game, they were so dominant. It reminded me of when Man City decided to turn it up against Wolves in the last 10 or 15 minutes and scored three as well. I want to see that Man City for 15 minutes and that Bayern Munich for 15 minutes go up against each other. It'd be like 8-8 over, you know, 20. It's just unbelievable how good those guys are when they can turn it on. Obviously City didn't do it today, but I really want to see Bayern Munich, Man City in the Champions League, but I don't want to take anything away from Borussia Dortmund. They're so close to being really, really good, but they're lacking some consistency. And I look at them almost similarly to Liverpool. I don't know exactly what it is, because on paper, they should be better. Is it just because they got some slow center backs, or they're missing a piece? I think Axel Witsel's not playing, actually hurts them quite a bit. We don't talk about him after he got hurt for the season. So that he misses that. But then with Bayern Munich, God, those guys are so good. And they're really fun to watch. And I think we were really treated to something special.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Borussia Dortmund's defensive line just needs to vamp up a little bit, just completely rechange itself. It's a little too old, I think, a little too slow. Not to take anything away from them. It's just when you play Bayern, that's what's going to happen. HP, what'd you make of this game? Bayern Munich just doing their thing.
Yeah, look, there was no Jadon Sancho. There was no Gio Reyna. When I look at the lineup, I think you're right. I think there's... When they're firing on the attack, they always seem to be vulnerable on the defense. And then when they play more defensive, they don't seem to have much firepower outside of Haaland, who brings them most of their attack anyway. But when you look across Thomas Delaney, no pace, Emre Can, no pace, Mats Hummels aging. Good to see Meunier is back and healthy again. But yeah, it's one of those ones where you see those flashes. And I think Jimmy actually said it really well there, which is like they are so close. And I said it last week on our recap, which is like, I just want them in the title race because you see it, you see something there. And it's just these stretches, you know, when you go into tactical games, you talk about like, can we put together a good performance for longer stretches, right? Because there's an ebb and flow of every game where you're dominating and then you're up against the wall, you're settling in, all these different things, as we know, that go into a game. And those stretches, you just want them to be longer where they're good, where they're consistent, where they don't shut up. There's not individual errors and they're as a unit. And you can see they are close to something, but I mean, Bayern Munich are unbelievable. I think Lewandowski is on, you know, it's like one of these things where it's like the up and comer and is Haaland. He scores his couple. And then Lewandowski's like, you know, this is the old boys club, you know, like just wait and shows him what a true like Hall of Fame goal scorer is versus somebody who's got a lot of potential. And now he's on pace, I think, to break Mueller's record potentially at 38 or 39 goals in a season after his goals this weekend. So yeah, it's the crazy part in the Bundesliga, by the way, is that RB Leipzig are still 2 points off of Bayern Munich. Yeah. And I don't know. I was hoping that Jimmy would hit me with a stat of how many times Bayern have had to come from behind to get results this season. But it's a lot of times they've had these wake-up calls. We've talked about it multiple times where they just go down and they go, okay, it's time to play. And then they just crank it up. And maybe that's the motivator. And that could be a dangerous game against, you know, deep in the Champions League, but it works in the Bundesliga. Though I do want to give credit to Leipzig, who are still in this title race.
Yeah, I think Borussia Dortmund fans will be a little upset at us if we don't mention the fact that it was 2-0 for a very long time. Haaland comes off in the 60th minute, right? And obviously things become a little bit more complicated for Borussia Dortmund, even though Bayern is dominating. But when you don't have your best player on the pitch, things become a little bit trickier. And then it's not till way later, the 88th minute, I believe, is when suddenly they get that lead. And then another one in the 90th with the penalty. So, Jimmy, you know, it wasn't so far off. I wonder what the game would have looked like if Haaland was there the entire game. Do you still think Bayern Munich would have taken this anyway?
I do. I think they had a lot of the possession. I think they were dictating a lot of the terms. I think that Borussia Dortmund came out with the right energy. And to Heath's point, they need to figure out how to be a good team for 90 minutes, not just 45 minutes, not just 60 minutes. And I think that lends itself to some of the youth, right? I think you see that a lot with youth. I proved myself over. I scored 2 goals. Not necessarily I'm pointing right at Erling Haaland, but there's a lot of players saying, oh, we're good. We did it. We just slapped around the reigning European champions. What's, you know, what else do we have left to prove? But it's a 90 minute game. It's not a 45 minute one. And so they do have some work to do, and they do have some recruiting to do. So it'll be interesting to see what the summer looks like for Borussia Dortmund. There is one stat though I have for you, Heath. You're going to love this one. Robert Lewandowski has scored 31 goals after 24 games in the Bundesliga. That would have already been the best goal scorer in 52 of all the past 57 Bundesliga seasons.
It's ridiculous.
What? How old is that guy? You're supposed to get slower after 30. This guy just continues to get better with age. Not only him. You got, you know, Ronaldo's still getting better after 30 or 35. Messi, Karim Benzema scoring some goal, you know, having some impact and still being influential. Anyway, I just throwing those names
no,
out.
No, it's but amazing. Lewandowski.
It's a really incredible.
This year. Yeah.
The guy's incredible. The guy's incredible.
By the way, Boateng went out with an injury. That looks bad. And that's my only worry for Bayern is that, you know, he is a rock in that back line. I don't know what the diagnosis of it was, but, you know, it didn't look good.
Yeah, that's a worry for sure. And by the way, shout out to Leroy Sané, who I thought was really good. All right, let's keep going here because we said this a lot. So we're going to continue. La Liga, a lot going on in Spain, by the way. As we're taping, it should be pretty much confirmed that Joan Laporta will be the president of Barcelona, by the way. He, according to polls by TV3 in Catalonia, he has nearly 60% of the votes. That should be confirmed. As you hear this, I'm sure it'll be official. Laporta, of course, who was president back when Messi actually started in the first team. He was actually responsible for Ronaldinho's entrance to the club, I believe. But he also left because of financial difficulties. So now his whole thing is, listen, Messi's family trusts me more than anybody. I can make sure that he stays, et cetera. So if Laporta indeed becomes a president, you know, that should be good news for some Barcelona fans. We will see what happens because obviously you can clearly see that the vote is about making sure, aside from the 1 billion euro debt, and making sure that Messi stays. So we'll see what happens there. But all in all, boys, Jimmy Conrad, Barcelona had a good week, a great comeback in Copa del Rey to make it to the final. They beat Osasuna. Messi played so well, obviously. A young star of theirs as well also scored. And Atleti and Real Madrid tied. So that's fantastic for them. So all in all, really good, Jimmy, for Barcelona. And you can include, of course, your thoughts on the Madrid derby right there.
Yeah, what a week for them. You know, as much turmoil as they have been surrounded in or swimming in or whatever you want to say, they have been pretty good. And Ronald Koeman is pressing a lot of the right buttons. And yes, they might not always play as aesthetically pleasing as we've seen them in the past. The Pep Guardiola get the ball, pass the ball, tiki-taka. But they are effective. And I think what Ronald Koeman will hopefully get credit for at some point is really bringing along these younger players. Pedri had over 100 touches in the game. Like, there's some really incredible stats about how influential these younger players are playing. And, you know, was it Moraes? What's his name? The youngster scored today.
Yeah, Moraes, yeah.
yeah, his first ever goal for Barcelona. That guy looks like a player. And you got Ansu Fati and you got Trincao. I mean, Frankie de Jong's already on Sufa. It's just is sick. These guys are going to be good. So it might be a nice little transition, but Ronald Koeman definitely deserves some praise for that. Now, with regard to the Madrid derby, I watched every single minute of it, and I thought the 1-1 was a fair result. And I saw that Saul came out, or Koke came out, and said that, oh, we dominated the game. I was like, I don't know. We were watching the same game, dude. I thought that Real Madrid did a very good job of taking what Atleti was giving them, which was the wide space. They whipped in so many crosses, and obviously Atleti are going to defend those very well with their own center backs, and then obviously with one of the best goalkeepers in the world in Jan Oblak. Thought Benzema was very active, but what ended up happening was they tried their hardest, Atleti, to not let any combinations happen in the middle of the field near around the top of the box, and Atleti fouled them a lot around the top of the box. I have a lot of issues with their impatience defending, but that's what ended up happening. Casemiro makes a good run, nice combination with Benzema, and they get a little tap in and make it 1-1. I thought the 1-1 was a fair result. Madrid needed that really to stay alive in the title race. So that kind of keeps things interesting there. But Atleti, now we're sensing, I think you're sensing a little bit of vulnerability. They only have one game in hand now. We were talking about how they had all these games in hand at the beginning. They had a big 10-point lead or whatever. Now they're only 3 points above Barcelona with one game in hand. They got Athletic Bilbao midweek. That's going to be their one to make everything even. I don't know if Atleti's going to win the league anymore. I think that Barcelona or Real Madrid could probably catch him at the end. It's going to be close, though, and that's what I like about La Liga. Is that it really feels like a proper three-team horse race to the finish.
Absolutely. You know, Atleti, 59 points, played 25. So that, they have that game in hand, as you mentioned. Barcelona, 56 points. Real Madrid, 54. By the way, April 11, Real Madrid against Barcelona. Mm-hmm. May 9th. Barcelona against Atletico Madrid. Mm-hmm. So things are getting real tight here. Heath Pierce, any thoughts on the Madrid derby? Barcelona's amazing week and just what could happen in the future?
No, I think obviously Atleti still have to play against Sevilla. They've got Barcelona, right? Real Madrid have Barcelona and they have Atletico in May. They have El Clasico as well. So there's still a lot of points that can send these 6-pointers one way or another to help this three team race. But I think in the first half, I thought Atleti did better. I think in the second half, Real Madrid, we saw a little bit of a different team, a little more settled in, a little more dominant. Obviously, I think Atletico are comfortable giving up possession and sitting deeper in the second half, but they looked a little bit more on the front foot. And so I do think a draw makes sense. But overall, you know, with the form that Barcelona are in, Messi had two assists over the weekend, obviously on 19 goals in the league. We've seen everybody slip up, right? And we've seen the one we didn't see slipping up was Atletico all season long. And now they're starting to chip away at points. Like Jimmy said, they had games in hand and they were 9 points clear. And now they're 3 points clear with a game in hand. They have to play Bilbao twice. But this could be the bounce back where it sort of settles the score. This next one where they kind of feel a little bit comfortable again to keep going. But you could see in Luis Suarez's face after the match, there was just this, some sort of look to him that was like, this was a moment lost. And it wasn't just about losing 2 points. There was just like a momentum. There was like this vulnerability almost look in his face of like, man, it's going to be a long run for the rest of this year if they're going to close this out, because now you've let two teams with world-class talent back into the conversation.
And I'll tell you what, after every single game, Atleti better wrap Luis Suarez in bubble wrap and not let him get in, because if they lose him to injury, forget about it, because he is the X factor. He is the main reason why Atleti are doing so well offensively. Of course, Joao Felix is good, but he's no Luis Suarez. So that's going to be key. And obviously what's going to be key is, you know, what happens in the Champions League, et cetera, and how many more games need to be added to the schedule. All right. Serie A. Italy, Juventus beat Lazio without needing, by the way, Cristiano Ronaldo for the entire game, which is good news for them as they obviously look ahead to the Champions League as well. They win 3-1. AC Milan win as well. Inter play Atalanta on Monday. But all is as is. So the good thing for Juventus and Andrea Pirlo, Jimmy, is that, you know, sometimes you can just let Ronaldo chill for a little bit and see what can happen. I wonder if things can go either way for either AC Milan or Juventus, or Inter really just has to continue to focus on themselves and take care of business. What do you think?
Yeah, I like Inter all the way. I think Milan played well this weekend to get the results. I watched those highlights in a part of the game when I had the chance to do so. And Hellas Verona is not easy to beat, especially at home. And I thought they went out and did the job. sometimes I wonder if they're better with or without Zlatan. Bigger conversation for another time. Rafael Leao is very busy up top. I really like his game a lot, but some unlikely scorers for them, guys that never play. I don't know if you guys saw Krunic's free kick, but it's ridiculous. So take a look at that if you guys get a chance to see the highlights. What I'll say, I got a fun fact for you guys. I always have these for you. AC Milan are the fourth side to have picked up 100-plus points in the top five European leagues since January 1st, 2020. Only after Man City, Bayern Munich, and Real Madrid. So that's pretty good company for Stefano Pioli and a team that I still feel like is, well, at one point was looking for their identity for a good portion of that year. So fair play to Milan for really good. That said, I don't think they're going to catch Inter. I think Inter have too much momentum, too much belief. I think they've got a nice sense about them. And if they can do the business on Monday, then they should be good. Juve, though, to your point, Luis, I thought was excellent. I thought Chiesa in particular was very good against Lazio. And what I really liked was the fact that Lazio scored first, and it was a giveaway. Kulusevski gave away a bad ball, and that led to Joaquin Correa to go in and score a very good goal. But the fact that Juve fought back and had that spirit and energy without having to rely on their magical talisman, Cristiano Ronaldo, I think speaks wonders and it says a lot about the depth that they have. Rabiot was good. Ramsey was good. A lot of guys stepped up that maybe haven't had the opportunity to really fill that leadership and responsibility role in a meaningful way. And that's, if you're going to win any trophy of consequence, you need your guys that don't necessarily step up to step up sometimes. And we've seen it right now with Real Madrid, with Casemiro, you know, all of a sudden, you know, anytime they do win, sometimes Casemiro pops in. You're like, you never count on Casemiro to do that. But these guys, I'm using him as an example, have to step up as well. That's how you win a title. A lot of people have to chip in.
Yeah, absolutely. And with Napoli winning today, by the way, 3-1, that means Lazio go 7th, Napoli 6th, Atalanta 5th, who play Inter Milan. And to your point, Inter lead Serie A with 59 points, AC Milan 56, Juventus 52. So it's still kind of tight, Heath Pierce, but I think the narrative will begin to just cement itself, as they say, as Inter probably look good because they don't have anything else to worry about.
Yeah, I agree. And obviously, if you're Milan, and I don't know if AC Milan are rotating their squad because of their busy schedule or if they're tinkering, because there hasn't been, when they've been good, they've still been tinkering, but they've had a somewhat consistent lineup, but it's good to see that they got a result this weekend. Obviously, as Jimmy said, without Zlatan is a different conversation, but it's allowing other players to step up. And then when you look at Juventus, Alvaro Morata, that's one that I want to point out, of just, again, when you talk about depth of being able to get results, knowing that we talked about, I want to say I don't remember who we were talking about last weekend on needing rest. I don't know what team and what league we were talking about, how they're not getting any rest for their players, but this is one where you actually manage it. You got to manage the roster. You come into a game like this, you're playing against Lazio. It's a very difficult result. And your mindset is, we have to win this, right? And to have that maturity, from Pirlo to be able to rotate the squad. Granted, they have world-class depth, but your instinct is to play your best team, right? Because you are sort of chasing the title. You want to stay in it, but to be able to rotate some guys out like their best player in Weston McKinney, having to sub him in later on. That was a joke, guys. Weston McKinney's not their best player. I think that's a sign of maturity for a young manager to be able to be willing to do that. You know, resting Ronaldo is one thing because, you know, you have to, you got to like manage the miles he puts on, but rotating a squad against a team that's very capable of beating you, I think is a sign of maturity for Pirlo.
Yeah, I think we were talking about Bruno Fernandes last time around, about resting him and me.
That's the one.
But, you know, he scored a goal today, so maybe he doesn't need to rest. All right, we're going to end this one. Well done, everybody. We're doing this under an hour. We just went round Europe under an hour. So proud of you. So proud of you all. All right, we're going to finish it with some questions. First of all, from our friend, John Morosi, a great guy, fan of the show, broadcaster, of course, loves his Italian football. And he's asking, let's begin with you, Jimmy. He's asking, because you know we're ending with Serie A, with Lukaku, Lautaro, Varela, De Vrij, and Bastoni all under contract beyond this season, is Inter poised to become the Serie A favorite for the next 2 years? Or are their key players benefiting from the lighter workload without European football the last 3 months? First of all, John, they haven't won anything yet, so just slow your roll. All right, my friend. But Jimmy, what do you think? What do you think about the question from John?
Okay. There's a lot of layers here. Hi, John. I'm going to say that first and foremost, I want to see how Inter Milan play against Atalanta tomorrow, because Atalanta are in terrific form. And Inter didn't look great against Parma midweek, but they did enough. They had some good individual performances to win 2-1. Another sign of a potential champion. I'm going to air quotes around potential. I think they're going to do it, John, so if that makes you feel any better. However, it does help that they have a lighter workload, that a manager like Antonio Conte, who's so detail-oriented, has a whole week to prepare for games, as opposed to, oh, wow, I got to go midweek to take on Red Star Belgrade. And then after that, I can start concentrating on the week's games. Like, that just throws you off. And obviously, you got to take all the periodization into consideration in terms of getting guys proper rest. What are they doing when they get that rest? So they're like, you know, massages, all that type of stuff. You know, what are they doing in the recovery mode? So there's a lot to take into consideration. I think because they don't have to worry about that, that lends itself to them being or having an advantage. Whether they take advantage of that, that's something different, obviously, and they got to play the games to figure it out. With regard to your signings, I think that Antonio Conte could sense that this was a good season to win the league, and he went out and signed old guys to make sure he got there, right? He went and got Kolarov, Arturo Vidal, brought Perisic back from Bayern Munich. Like, he got guys that know how to play and win games. And I think that was really important. Now, moving forward, they've obviously shown with Bastoni and Barella, they got some younger players that can play as well. Hakimi's very young too, as well. Lautaro's not very old. And Lukaku can be a guy you build around. So you have this nice nucleus that I think will attract other players to come. So if Inter go on and win the Scudetto this season, I could really see other people being like, oh, Inter's kind of where I want to play. There's a nice vibe about that team. You start to build that buzz, and then all of a sudden you get all these other players, and yeah, you could go on a nice little run. But given the success of Juve in Serie A, I just, you know, they're going to recharge at some point and get it going. And so it should be competitive. I think that's all we wanted, right? The same thing we saw with Rangers and Celtic and all these other leagues. You just want it to be competitive. And that's what I think we want out of Serie A.
Heath, what do you think? Good stuff there, Jimmy. What do you make of it?
That was a lot of layers by Jimmy. I'm going to go with a couple layers only. I think Liverpool is the example of a team that was set up, again, like I mentioned earlier, to win multiple years. There's certain things you can control and you can't control. I don't think Inter Milan is deep enough right now to manage what their new ambition will be, right? Their new ambition won't be, oh, we won the league, let's win the league next year, Champions League, let's hope to get out of the group stages. You are now the champions of Serie A. You are expected, like Juve, to set the same standard and goals to go and try to win European trophies as well. And when you have a Lukaku at the front, the attention around that means the bar gets set higher next year. And I don't think they have the team to do that necessarily, though I do think they will be one of the favorites. I don't think this is a Leicester City one-off year where they kind of dangle around in the top four for a few years and after winning one. I do think that they can challenge. But again, Juve, who apparently need to shed wages, have the ability at any time to be good for long stretches. And then AC Milan, maybe less so with their current roster. So I do think that they're a one or two for the next multiple years, but they're certainly gearing up for what I think could be a longer run if they do have a few more strategic signings as well that give them depth in the way that we thought that Liverpool were going to have with some of their signings this year.
What great answers, John. You can't complain. Two great I'll be super simple. Yes, they're doing well because they're not in the Champions League and they're not in the Europa League, and it's a lighter load. I think it's a totally different story next season. All right, we got one more question here before we say goodbye, and that's from Ant FC. I like it. Ant FC, I like it. Is Luke Shaw, Jimmy, and Heath, let's go with you first, Jimmy. Is Luke Shaw the most underrated player in the Premier League? He says, I say yes. Oh, I got my own to tell you in a second. But Jimmy, what do you think? Is Luke Shaw the most underrated player in the Premier League?
Well, I'll say Alex Telles is the most underrated player because he's the one that's actually motivated Luke Shaw to get his act together. So let's just start there. I will say that I think that Jack Grealish deserves a shout. I don't know if anybody had these high expectations. I think Cancelo and Gundogan from Man City probably deserve a shout. Ruben Dias. I think those guys are obviously, maybe they're not underrated per se, but I think coming into the season they were. I do want to give a shout out to Dominic Calvert-Lewin. I think he's really emerged. Patrick Bamford is another one that I think deserves some praise. So it's really tough. I'm kind of just trying to decide on which one I really want to highlight. So I'm now going to pass the mic to somebody else while I figure it out.
Well, before I say it to Heath, it's very difficult, the word underrated in itself, because what does that mean? Like, are we talking about somebody that we had no idea was going to be this good? Or are we talking about somebody who deserves to be named in a sort of, world-class sort of platformer? They're good, but they really should be talked about more. What do you think, Heath? Is Luke Shaw the most underrated player in the Premier League, or do you have somebody that really needs to be talked about more?
I'm pretty sure Luke Shaw just scored his second goal today
against Man City.
I agree. It's a huge moment. For sure. So maybe that would put you closer to the traditional kind of underrated category. James Ward-Prowse, I think, is one for me that I think is underrated. He's part of that era of like specialists. You don't have a lot of specialists anymore, where it's like draw foul near the box because we have a chance to score anytime he's got his foot on it type of thing. Bamford is another one that I had in mind too, that I really like. Those would be the couple that I would say are underrated. But again, the you have to set parameters on underrated, because I would also say Gareth Bale was overrated so long that now he's underrated, right? Now he's underrated. The expectations were nothing when he arrived.
Week by week.
People gave him 3-4 games and they were like, oh, he's done. And now he's underrated. Now he's delivering where he's best, underrated.
Exactly. It's like our podcast has always been underrated, but really we're actually meeting the standards of what we are, which is great. Jimmy, final thoughts, by the way.
I got it. I'm going with Thomas Suchek from West Ham.
Oh, very good.
West Ham have no business, in my opinion, being as close to the top four as they are. He's got 8 goals and 4 assists from a holding midfield position. Without him, they wouldn't even be in the conversation. So
very good. Our friend James Benj will like that one. He will totally like that one. No, the correct answer is Ezri Konsa, Ant FC.
What I thought you were going to go with Emiliano Martinez.
No, he's not underrated. We already know how amazing he is.
Like, I'm just glad you took Grealish before he could, Jimmy. I appreciate that.
Yeah. I threw that out just to wet his whistle.
Jack Grealish is not underrated. He's incredible. We've always thought that he may be underrated by people that don't know the game. That's a different conversation. So, Ant FC, I hope you got your answer there. I think Tommy Suchek is the right answer, actually. I think that's a good one. That's a good one. I like that. All right, everybody. That was our weekend recap. And by the way, it's official. Joan Laporta is the new president of Barcelona.
Best of luck to him.
Best of luck to him, indeed. Final thoughts before we say goodbye, Jimmy Conrad.
No, I hope everybody had a good weekend, and I hope you're buckling your seatbelts because we have a huge Champions League and Europa League week coming up.
Absolutely. Heath Pierce.
Yeah, my last note is that Inter Milan also, when the world goes back to normal and the nightclubs open in Milan, will also be an issue in terms of them trying to repeat. The temptation is not there right now, and that's hard to do.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. And actually, I would say that to all clubs, including Leeds United, by the way. West Yorkshire at night, ooh, watch out. Jimmy, thank you so much, brother.
Thank you.
Heath, thank you, my man.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, everybody. I want to thank Jimmy Conrad and Heath Pierce for joining me today. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Que Golazo Pod, and keep sending us questions and tweets on Que Golazo Pod. We love to hear from you. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CBSSports.com. Keep supporting the show. It's the best way for us to grow. We got the Champions League coming back with the second leg of the round of 16. So stick around with us every single weekday. Have a great, great beginning to your week.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.